Paso.
It's said that the whole of the Buddha-dhamma, both in terms of teaching and practice, it's said in Tibetan, Nyingje Tsawajin, has its root of compassion. For its root, it is rooted in compassion. And this is quite clearly indicated by the fact that the First Noble Truth is not the First Noble Truth of genuine happiness. Could be. It'd give it kind of a nicer spin. The PR would be much better, I think. You know? But it's not. Because if one started that way, one would have to start with faith. Start with something that one doesn't know anything about and say, okay, now tell me, because I don't know, what's this genuine happiness business? Does it really exist? Do I have to believe it? And then you're starting out wobbly. Start out with the reality of suffering. Who doesn't know about that? You know? And even when we're not suffering, that is not experiencing blatant suffering, for those of us who have some imagination, we know even in the best of times we're vulnerable. Even in the best of times, we're vulnerable. And that's just got to give some background radiation of anxiety. Even when things are going so well. The people who managed to subdue that the most effectively in the times of antiquity were those who would so deeply withdraw into samadhi, into the form realm, the formless realm, that they felt they had run away so far away from suffering that suffering couldn't find them. Way up in the absorption of nothingness, in neither perception nor non-perception and so forth. Mara will never find me here. You know. Little did they know that it was karma that got them there, and karma will be exhausted and Mara will find them once again, the Lord of Death. So for good reason, we start with the reality of suffering. To really face it clearly. And I think we've been doing that. We've had no anesthetic. We've had no anesthesia for the last 7 weeks. Right? I think you all know that. Pretty much you, here's your mind, welcome to the mind center. And then a number of you have big chunks of hair that have been pulled out, at least metaphorically. Let me out of here. Well, we will. 1 week from now, we're gone. Right. So to really take a long, close look, and that's exactly what we've been doing for 7 weeks, take a long, close look. You know, and in an environment that has given us so little in terms of suffering, there's so little here that's disagreeable. Isn't it true? I mean, really, who is causing this pain from outside? We'll have to really, that'd be a long meditation, you know. Who's really been causing this pain from outside? So whatever discomfort we've experienced over the last 7 weeks, well, we know where it came from. The mind center. The center of our own minds. But let's pause there and come right back to this marvelous and extremely provocative statement from the Dzogchen tradition. Having really taken a long, close look at the reality of suffering, multiple dimensions, blatant suffering of change, existential suffering, let's just call it that. Then we go to the second noble truth, the reality of the source of suffering. And in the Dzogchen tradition, what is that? It's grasping onto that which is not I and mine as being I and mine. That is reifying, sense of self, I and mine. That's the first aspect, and then not realizing who we actually are. Shamatha comes into play very quickly here. Because now we go back to classic Buddhist philosophy, which I think has enormous power. Just the intellectual might of it is like titanium. And that is that there are two modes of ignorance. There's learned ignorance, and there's conate ignorance. The conate is what you're born with. And you're born with it, whether you're born as a slug, as a bat, as a preta, as a human being, deva, whatever, it comes with the territory. You're in samsara, then you've got a life pass, a death pass of conate ignorance, inborn, innate ignorance. But and so that's what we're born with. But then over the course of our lives, then we have another type of ignorance, marikunda, acquired, learned, fabricated, about many, many things. But the core here is about who do you think you are, and it literally is that. You know? Descartes did it, I think, therefore I am, and set himself on the treadmill of samsara with those words. You know? But it's not just thinking I am, but it's thinking and then reifying. And so if we look briefly at how we conceive of ourselves in ways that we've learned, we'll find that that's a very broad bandwidth. Do you think you're a woman? You weren't born that way. When you were inside the womb, you weren't thinking, I'm a girl. You know, you had to learn that one. Because you didn't know any boys. How do you know that you're a girl when there's no boys around? Unless there's twins, and you don't really talk much. Or look at each other's private parts. Hey, you got something I don't have. Not happening. So you're not born even with a sense of gender. Right? Let alone are you from Mexico, Brazil, America, Greece, and so forth. Let alone are you well-educated, not educated, tall or skinny, fat, short, and so forth and so on. You learn all of that. Are you a husband or a wife? Are you ordained? Are you a brother, a sister? Are you a parent? And so we're taking on all of these guises. We're learning who we are. We're learning who we are. And then, you know, and then it sets, like concrete. It sets. How dare you speak to me like that? I'm your mother. Her. Reified mother. You don't talk to your mother that way. Who do you think I am? I'm your mother. I'm inherently existent primordially your mother. And you're a kid and you're my kid to the pipe down, you know. And so we can really reify all of our roles. And we do. Even the kind of body you have. Do you really think you always had a body like that? You know, good macho guy, bald head. I am really macho. I am macho guy. When you were 3 years old, you weren't nearly that macho. You didn't even probably know how to wipe your own bum, you know? And when you're 80 years old, you may not know how to wipe your bum again. And so there it is, all in transition, you know? So whatever we are, we tend to think, that's why I'm an old man. I'm a young man. I'm really macho guy. I'm a kid. All of this we learn and then we unlearn, we learn and unlearn, but it's all on that level. An enormous amount of suffering comes from reifying these learned senses of I am. Shamatha just cuts through all of that. Settling the mind, we watch it happen, awareness of awareness, we just cut right through it. Whoever you've learned you are, you've acquired over the decades of your life. Awareness of awareness, you just cut right through it. It says, I don't care. Male, female, old, young, fat, skinny, handsome, ugly, express train, not even looking. I'm going to that who I was before I am. That who I am before I was. That is, what's primal here? What's baseline? What's stripped down, bare, nuclear, sentient being that isn't even human? Right? So, no wonder it's a bit rough going. No wonder shamatha is not so easy. Comes up with a lot of ups and downs and dredges up a lot of emotions and memories and talk about defense mechanisms. 7 weeks, you've just scratched the surface. You know. Start getting down there where you're settling closer and closer to the substrate consciousness and see how many defense mechanisms. Oh, I don't think so. I don't think so. No, not me. Not me. Not me. Until, you know, you achieve shamatha and it's stripped right down to the bone. There's nothing left of who you thought you were, that you acquired, I am this, I am that, that you acquired over the course of your life. You're stripped down to the bone. There's nothing there. It's non-conceptual. You have no personal history. You have no gender. You don't even have a species specification. When you're in the substrate consciousness, you're bare, raw, nuclear, primal, sentient being. Right? So all that you've learned that you are, stripped away. And now, stripped away, and there you still are. No longer a woman, no longer a man, no longer a human being, no longer fat, skinny, old, young, short, and so forth. There you still are. Even resting in the substrate. I am. Doesn't even need to articulate. It's just kind of the background. I'm still here. That level of I am, you didn't learn that one. You didn't learn to have a substrate consciousness. You learned to be a woman. You learned to be a little girl. Learned to be a guy. Learned to be Mexican, Brazilian, and so forth. but you didn't learn how to have a substrate consciousness. And so the sense of I am that's there, that's still murmuring away, pre-vocal and not clearly articulated, that's core. That grasping onto I am that's still there as you're resting quietly in the substrate consciousness, that's core. You're now down to bare bones. That level of grasping, I am, that emerges right out of, right there in the substrate consciousness. Now you've come down to the real nucleus, right? So if one is practicing Vipassana without having come down to baseline, you may realize the emptiness of being a man, a woman, and so forth and so on, and yet never even touch the core. You're just peeling off the... It's like I had to do a lot of weeding when I was a kid. We always had weeding. And when I wanted some money, then I went off and for 50 cents an hour, I weeded the neighbor's yards, you know, earned $300 of weeding. Well, everybody who knows about weeds, you know, there's two ways of dealing a weed. Just pull off the top. It's faster. And the root, and leave the root. It's much, much faster. Or just shave it off. Like that, right? But they're weeds, so of course they'll grow right back. If all in your Vipassana practice, if all you're doing is shaving off, oh, I see, I'm not really Alan Wallace, Stanford PhD. Oh, I get it. I'm not really simply a Californian. Oh, I get it. Blah, blah, blah. Shaving off the top. Never getting to the root. And it will come right back up again. You know, it will always come back up again. So maybe this is why the Buddha clearly implied, and I cited this earlier, remember that citta nimitta? That sign of the mind and suggesting if you're really going to have an effective Vipassana practice, you have to ascertain the sign of the mind. What's the sign of the mind? The substrate consciousness. Right. Get down to the nucleus. It's like, I think it's a little bit, isn't it, like getting over cancer and having to get up all the cancer and not kind of just leave a little nucleus of it. It will grow right back again. Get right down and gut it. So there's nothing left at all. So citta nimitta, getting down to the substrate consciousness, down to the radical core sense of I am, the reified sense of I am. And then from that platform, now you've got it naked. It's got no armor. I am a woman. I'm a man. All that shells. It's got nothing. It's kind of like, if you get me, then you win. Get any of the shells, we'll come right back again. But if you get me, there's nothing behind me. If you realize the emptiness of me, the self that is left when you're resting in the substrate consciousness, there's no other, there's no backup. There's no backup. You're down to core. Win that battle and you win. Win that battle, there's no way for them to come back. Because there's no backup. So shamatha vipassana. From the platform of substrate consciousness, seeing the sense, this primal sense, this innate sense of I am coming up, which is the root for the bifurcation of dualistic grasping and the rest of the samsara, all flows. But now you've really come right down to the root. This is exactly what Padmasambhava is getting at when he's saying, go in there and observe that which is the agent. Go in there and observe that was, peel back the layers. Peel back all the other layers, just shoot right through them. Right back to who is that person quietly observing, standing apart from, even before acting. Who is that? And see if it's anything more than a conceptual projection, make-believe, a role, an empty appearance. And when you see that the sense of self, this natsam, this mere I, that is designated upon the continuum of subtle consciousness, mental consciousness, and then is reified. When you see that self too is just something conceptually fabricated, a little conceptual squirt, when you see that, that it's utterly empty, then you know who you are not. And therefore you know what you don't have. That is, I have a body, I have a mind, and so forth and so on. And now you cut it to the root. If you realize the emptiness of that, cut through this innate delusional grasping onto I am, You've now gone right to the root. So it's an old weeder. You've gotten your trowel down there and you rip it up and you see there's the whole plant. You're holding it up. There's just dirt down below. That's the whole root. If you're up there, you're not growing again. Bye. And draw it where it just dries up. Right? But there's nothing to grow anymore. That plant's not growing back. You got all of it. Right? So once you're there, congratulations, you just nailed half of the reality of the source of suffering. You've now realized who you are not. And it's kind of like dot, dot, dot. And, okay. And now that you've realized that all the way through, from the top of, I'm a 61-year-old Californian guy with a Stanford PhD, that's about as superficial as it gets, all the way down to the root, when you've seen it all empty, all the way up. And so there's just nothing there that is anything more than a conceptual designation, like that phony baloney stuff about being 61 years old and all of that, all the way down to the root. When you've seen there's, it's all empty. There's no competition. There's no backlash. Then you're really well prepared to realize who you are. Because there's no one to talk back and say, uh-uh. There's no beggar to say, I am not a prince. And then starting giving the spiel. This is why I'm not a prince. Look at my clothes. Look at the way I talk. I talk like a beggar. Look at my toenails. Don't they look like the toenails of a beggar? You know, there's just, when the beggar has totally and absolutely irreversibly realized that I'm not a beggar, and there's nothing to hold on to, has completely gained the confidence of not being a beggar, fathomed it, then the wise minister say, all right, you've totally fathomed that, haven't you? Good. And now look back further. Probe more deeply. Now you've seen who you are not. And now probe back more deeply. Probe inside. Almost like looking through space-time. Look out 13 billion light years. Look back in time 13 billion years. So the beggar then, having seen, all right, this whole sense of I am the beggar, all of that just comes from circumstances. But there's no one there. And seeing that there's nothing there that is a beggar. Now go inside and probe even more deeply. All right, now you've realized who you are not. And now go in more deeply and realize who you are. And in that moment, he doesn't need some ceremony to be knighted as royalty, does he? Because he probes so deeply that he sees he's already royalty. And there's no initiation needed. So that's what Dujom Lingpo was talking about, wasn't it? When he said, realize Rigpa and you have all the empowerments. Not from some glorious lama, not from some cruddy lama. You know, some make-believe guy who just knows how to ring bells. You know, going blah, 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 like that. It's not too hard. Right. You received empowerment from your Buddha nature, Dharmakaya. Oh, quite a lama. So, this came up this morning in relevance to compassion. We don't always find ourselves lovable, and that's the immediate catalyst for loving kindness for ourselves. We don't always find other people lovable. It's hard to see. You have to see through all those veils, right? Some they don't look lovable, they don't behave lovable, what they say is not lovable. So you have to keep on going, okay, is anybody in there who's lovable? You know, sometimes it's hard work. Right? But how deeply do we need to gaze to see that we ourselves are vulnerable to suffering? And everybody around us is vulnerable to suffering. How deep is that? You know, even if people are having a great time. Wonderful. Then we practice mudita, empathetic joy. But what were the causes and conditions of having a great time and how long will it be before they vanished? And their vulnerability to suffering is always there. The existential suffering is always murmuring there in their substrate consciousness. So no wonder then that the Buddha Dhamma is not said to be jamba ninje tsawajin, having its root in loving kindness. No wonder. So that would be a great root. Loving kindness sounds very, very nice. But that's not what it says. Ninje tsawajin. rooted in compassion. Nothing to believe, no leap of faith, no reliance on external authority. Just keep your eyes open, and you see, oh, suffering, vulnerability to suffering. Oh, everybody else too, huh? Then we have only one thing to do. Practice Dharma. And when you can, share Dharma. And if you can think of something else to do besides that, let me know. I can't think of anything else really worth doing besides those two things. But I'm kind of a fanatic, and you've learned that by now. Hola, so. Good. Let's practice. Release all appearances. Let your awareness rest in its own nature. Gazing into the empty mirror of your own awareness and seeing your own face. Enjoy your day.